I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from a Dubai in the UAE, targeted more than any other city except for those in Israel, Iran, and Lebanon in the Trump-Netanyahu war that began 3 weeks ago. Tens of thousands have been killed, wounded, or displaced. That's let alone the Pakistani mass killing this week of hundreds at a drug rehabilitation clinic in Afghanistan. But the so-called Epstein Fury War or conflict has also impoverished millions, if not billions. NATO nations have been forced to urgently subsidize energy for electorates already economically wounded by the Ukraine proxy war. At the time of recording this show, the only senior Trump official to resign has been Joe Kent, Trump's head of counterterror. He said, "I cannot in good conscience support the ongoing war on Iran. Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation. We started this war due to pressure from Israel." The 1940s Nuremberg Tribunal and UN Charter were meant to outlaw all of this. But Trump has committed the supreme international crime of aggression, punishable at Nuremberg by death. Does law matter? Do GCC countries have the ability to prevent Trump launching attacks on Iran? Who is behind the misinformation that the UAE will join the US and Israeli war? Dr. Habib Al-Mulla is one of the UAE's most respected legal authorities. He's been in the government here, including being on legislative and economic committees of the UAE's parliament. And he created the concept of financial free zones in the UAE, designing the legal framework for the Dubai International Financial Center, or DIFC. He's founder of the law firm Habib Al-Mulla and Partners and the author of memoir Life's Harvest. Habib, thanks so much for coming on Going Underground. I better, before we get to the legal perspective, I mean, you are one of the UAE's most respected legal scholars. The New York Times had a big page this week. Could this be the end of Dubai, complete with a model of Dubai? Could this be the end of Dubai? I mean, from a personal point of view, what have you thought about the way the media in, it has to be said, mainly NATO nations, have been describing the war's impact on Dubai and the UAE?
The disinformation. I mean, thank you for hosting me. Absolutely. I mean, I can't seriously count how many times in the past few years I have read or heard about this kind of headline. Dubai is over, Dubai is finished, everyone has abandoned it. I think, I mean, some people say that's part of ignorance, hatred. I can't, I mean, classify what that is. One thing I'm sure of is that does not at all reflect the reality on the ground. I remember, I think two or three nights ago, there was a headline in one of the Western media that everyone is fleeing, there are no tourists. And it just happened that I was having dinner, in fact, at one of the very popular Pakistani restaurants here, Ravi, which is very well known. And it was packed that there was no seat for me to sit. So they asked me if I could share a table with some people. I said, fine. So they were tourists from Spain, Catalonia, in fact. So I asked them, I mean, what you are doing here? They said, yeah, we came here for tourism. How is it? Are you worried? Are you afraid? Absolutely not. So I took a photo with them and I posted it on my X account and I tagged that newspaper saying, I mean, who said the tourists are fleeing? I'm just sitting next to some tourists from Spain and we are having a very casual dinner at one of the most popular casual restaurants in Dubai.
I mean, unfortunately, people are going to think we're just propagandizing, but we are based in Dubai, Going Underground is, and you know, it really is true. So that makes one start to think, why is it? And it's especially in Western European media, given the amount of investment the Gulf more generally, let alone the UAE particularly, has put into Western European companies and infrastructure, why those nations' media would be so specific? I mean, is it really just envy or is it something deeper?
I think it's a mixture of few things. Definitely, envy is one factor. The other thing is I believe that Dubai has been posing a serious competition to some of the Western capitals. I mean, it's not a secret. People have been moving from UK in particular, due to various reasons, to settle in Dubai, either because of safety, because of less taxes, so on. I mean, before this crisis or this conflict, we were in fact registering at least 2 to 3 companies for people moving from Western Europe, particularly UK, to Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and the likes. So, I mean, obviously for them, it was posing a serious threat to their position. Are they happy with what's happening? I mean, if you read the headlines, unfortunately, you will feel so.
You don't think, you haven't heard anything from the powers that be in the UAE that it's going to retreat from its position as a hub that favors a multipolar world, it favors cryptocurrency, it favors free markets. You haven't heard them suddenly say, okay, we'll bow to Western European pressure and start putting taxes on everyone and do all the things that governments in Western Europe do to the detriment of their populations as regards lack of investment for their infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely not. Dubai has proven everyone wrong every time. And I don't think this is going to be different. Yes, we have to admit it's difficult times, but so was COVID. So was the financial crisis. I mean, who thought that Dubai would survive the financial crisis in 2008? Everyone thought it's the end. And it has proven them to be wrong. And I have no doubt that it will do the same this time as well.
I mean, I have to say, countries that usually oppose hegemonic power as regards economic initiatives tend to earn the wrath of NATO nations in the past.
I mean,
whether it be, in Africa, the adoption of gold-based currencies instead of the dollar and so forth. You don't think the UAE will suddenly go, okay, we surrender, we'll do whatever you want us to do?
Absolutely not.
Okay, let's go to the legals. Does it matter, I have to ask a lawyer, a legal scholar, whether this conflict is a war or a conflict more generally? I mean, does anyone care about it ever since the war on Yugoslavia by NATO nations when Britain bombed Yugoslavia with other European countries and the United States? You know, that was an illegal war. No one ever cared since.
See, I can read and understand the frustration that some people have. Well, international law is doing nothing. I saw what you were saying in the beginning. It's a lawful war and so on. At the end of the day, we live in a particular world which has certain rules. Yes, there are people who ignore, abandon these rules. EU is not one of these countries. We have always played by the book. We do respect international law. We want the international law to be on our side. We want to prove that we are acting within the boundaries of the international law. Any aggression against us is a violation of international law. Now, whether the international community and international institutions are going to stand by us or not, that's another story. And the first part is that we need to establish that our narrative, our story, our right of the fact are in accordance with the principles of international law.
And so the Ministry of Foreign Affairs here very keen to say that the UAE retains the right for self-defense. Now, clearly, the interception rate has been, I don't think in history has there been under aerial attack a country as safe as the UAE with these very expensive interception methods that it's employing. I mean, clearly, there are those who would want the UAE to join the Israeli-American war. And there are continuous misinformation. There is continuous misinformation that Saudi Arabia and the UAE are just about to join this war. How do you characterize these rumors?
Okay. I mean, first we need to put things into context. Under UN's Charter, Article 51, every country that is under attack has the right of self-defense. So far, UAE has restrained itself. It doesn't, it has always been a peaceful country. It doesn't want to be dragged into any kind of conflict. Its utmost priority at this stage is to protect its citizens, its residents, protect the country. And I think, as you said, they have done an extraordinary job so far. The rate of interception of these missiles have been 100%, which is, I believe, unprecedented. Everyone, in fact, is going to work, having a social life without any risk or fear. Yes, well, people need to be cautious, but they trust that the leadership of the country is running things in a professional way. Now, I read, of course, some of the news that you will join the efforts or the aggression or the war that is being, or the conflict that is being taken against Iran. Personally, I don't think so. UAE has never, in its history, been aggressive to any country. The issue that they are facing today is the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, which is the bloodline, in fact, for many Gulf states. We have, the impact on us is less because we have ports outside the Arabian Gulf. Saudi Arabia also has less impact because they have their ports on the Red Sea. So I think if there is an international effort which is authorized probably by the Security Council, the UAE may take an effort in a joint international effort, as I think His Excellency Mr. Girgash said. But I don't believe that the news that is spreading that the UAE is going to be part of the attacks on Iran and the Iranian people, that is not going to happen. At the end of the day, we are bound by geography. Iran is a neighboring country. We have been living together for years and years, and for years and years to come. We always wanted to have a peaceful, normal relationship with Iran, irrespective of the regime that is there.
Yeah, I mean, Anwar Girgash said that, as you say. Of course, there's disinformation about UAE interventions in Sudan, maybe from the Muslim Brotherhood forces in the wider media, and there was interventions in Yemen, it has to be said. But if the UAE has this position, why has it not condemned the Israeli and United States action against Iran that caused the war?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, the intervention in Yemen was a request from the legitimate Yemeni government, and it was a part of a coalition effort. So it was not just one country going to another country. In Sudan, I think the decision of the International Court of Justice was clear. There were certain allegations. The one fraction of the Sudanese government made those allegations. It could not prove it. So I think that's not
even
something that
was reported wrongly.
UAE has acceded to.
Even their decision was
absolutely
reported wrongly in the end.
Yes, true, true. Now with why the UAE has not condemned, I mean, don't forget, we are under attack. I think the number of missiles that has been hit on the UAE so far has exceeded 1,000. For a country that has never experienced this. So there are our priorities that we need to take care of. We need to take care of our people, residents. We need to make sure that our institutions are running efficiently. There is no disruption in their work. There is no disruption in the supply chain. We need to stop this aggression that is taking place on our country. Once we deal with that, I think the EU government will take whatever course of diplomacy is necessary to try to stop this war.
Dr. Habib Al-Muller, I'll stop you there. More from the former Legislative Committee member of the UAE Parliament after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the former member of the UAE Parliament and founder of Habib Al-Muller and Partners, Dr. Habib Al-Muller himself. Dr. Al-Muller, we were talking about what sort of retaliation the UAE might invoke against Iran. I just wanted to pose one question. I mean, if the United States, in another world, bombed the UAE and the UAE was surrounded by US bases, would the UAE not retaliate against the countries hosting the US bases? And would they legally be allowed to do that?
I mean, first of all, these bases are being hosted under bilateral agreements. I think your question could have some justification if the attacks were initiated from these bases. But UAE and all the GCC countries have categorically mentioned that they will not allow any attacks to be launched from these military bases. They will not allow that. They have the sovereignty, the right to do that. Even Qatar, when their gas installations were targeted by the Iranians, they categorically said that they will not allow Americans forces to use the American base in Qatar to retaliate. So UAE was clear, all the GCC countries were categorically clear, these bases will not be used against Iran or to launch any attacks on it from Iran. They are being used for different purposes, logistic help, training, counterterrorism war, but never against to attack any country in the region, including Iran.
The only problem is that on this show, we had the head of intelligence of the US Pacific Fleet, the former head, and we had the former head of CENTCOM. And I told them, both of them on this show, that the GCC said no attacks on Iran from bases on their territory. It's different for a country like Bahrain, where there's a more complicated sovereignty argument. They both expressed disbelief that this was even true and said, well, you know, I mean, people can watch our interviews with them. They seem to assume that there was no actual ability of, say, Saudi Arabia or the UAE to control what was happening on Sultan Air Base over there or Al Dhafra Base up the road from the studio in Abu Dhabi.
Well, I trust the spokesperson of my country. And they have categorically denied that. They have said that, I mean, and it is not something secret. Even before the war was launched, all the GCC countries made it clear that if US forces are going or is going to attack Iran, they will not be allowed to use the bases that are situated in these countries. And even, I mean, let us see now today. Is Iran attacking, for example, these bases? The majority, if not all, of the missiles and the drones have targeted civilian installations, airports, oil facilities, hotels. I mean, if assuming, even for the sake of argument, that Iran's argument is, or whoever is saying this, is correct, why they are not only targeting the military bases? Why they are targeting civilian installations?
Yeah, one can understand the Strait of Hormuz as a choke point for the world economy. One can understand, I think one can understand assassination strikes in residential areas. After all, that's what the United States and Israel are clearly doing. But then how do you explain it? What is the rationale there? As you say, Iran has always had good relations with its fellow BRICS nation, the UAE. I remember interviewing Sheikh Mohammed here in Dubai 25 years ago, and he wasn't so sure about even the Greater Tombs Island dispute and whether the United States was leveraging that to create trouble between the UAE and Iran. In which case, do you think it shows a degree of command and control problems within the Iranian government?
I mean, whatever we say here could be mere speculation. Sure. Part of it could be because, I mean, they have taken the first line of leadership in Iran, so there could be an issue of command and control. The other justification could be is that they are trying to exercise pressure on the GCC countries so that they, in turn, try to exercise further pressure on the US to stop the war. So basically, I think their theory is that we are a soft target and they can hit us more than they can hit, for example, the American fleet or Israel.
I should say, as with the U.S. fleet, the U.S. Gerald Ford, the largest aircraft carrier in the world, is already retreating as I speak to you. But, you set the law for the DIFC free zone, and it's your understanding that jurisdiction here and sovereignty at the Al Dhafra base, even up the road, that the U.S. Air Force and the U.S. military uses, the jurisdiction is UAE jurisdiction for all that land that the U.S. soldiers are using and their killing machines.
Okay, I mean, let us break it into sections. First of all, the UAE will and does have the upper hand in saying whether these installations are going to be used against any other country or not. If they say no, it is not, categorically. Now, there are certain agreements which deal, for example, with the personnel there. I know, for example, that they are immune from being tried again in certain cases before national courts, but this is the same thing which happens, for example, with regard to embassies. So there are certain rules that govern the relationship between individuals and these installations. But what is clear is that the ultimate say for using these facilities against any other country lies and will always rely and remains with the UAE.
So an individual U.S. soldier could, with his battalion, launch an attack on Iran using some sort of missile from a base in the UAE and not be prosecuted?
No. That's not the case. For example, let us take an argument that if one of these soldiers is walking downside the street or he's in a hotel or something and he enters into a fight with someone, there are certain rules that governs, okay, which court is going to try him, which law is going to be applicable to him, that sort of things. But the use of the installations, the facilities itself, is always with the UAE government.
What did you think about the UN Security Council Resolution 2817, sponsored by Bahrain? I mean, Russia and China abstained. They tried to get it to be neutral, a kind of UAE position traditionally. In the end, the resolution only condemned Iran. What did you make of that resolution?
Yes. I think it's an excellent step diplomatically by the UAE. They managed to lay the first foundation of any further development on the diplomatic side and the legal side. The fact that the resolution has condemned Iran, called it an aggression, I think by itself means a lot. It means that the UAE is innocent. It means that Iran has violated international law, and that would have consequences. Now, the resolution fell short from having any measures like under Chapter 7 or taking any protection for the UAE or forming any kind of international force. But this was the first step. The fact that the UAE diplomatically has managed to make that resolution pass without any veto from Russia or China is by itself an achievement.
And clearly, no one's ever going to have a resolution condemning the United States or Israel for committing the international crime.
Well, that's an effort that Iran and its friends have to pursue.
I mean,
the problem is, if you are breaking the law, you can't at the same time ask for the protection of the law. The UAE has not broken any or violated any international. That's why the international community would sit beside it. Let us take, for example, if Iran was attacked and it did not do any aggression against the Gulf states and only defended itself.
But what would it do?
No, two things. If it directed all its attacks against U.S. and Israeli facilities, it would have had all the GCC countries, all the Arab countries, all the Muslim countries is standing by here, trying to bring into this war, trying to bring or pass a resolution at the Security Council. But unfortunately, it violated international law. So it would be a difficult argument for Iran to try to say that, well, the international law is not protecting me, while at the same time you are violating it.
Okay, well, let's get to the subject of compensation. You've already recommended, I understand, GCC start documenting all the destruction that has gone on since the Trump airstrikes on that school, which killed so many young girls between 5 and 12 in southern Iran. How much is the UAE, do you think, going to seek in compensation from the United States for starting this war?
From the United States? Okay. I mean, if we talk legally, we have two types of torts. We have person who directly is a tortfeasor, and we have a third party. In our case, U.S. has not attacked us. U.S. has not bombarded our civilian installations. U.S. has not killed our residents. It's Iran. So naturally, we are going, if we decide to sue anyone, it's going to be Iran, because they have caused all this damage. They have caused all these killings. Now, to document, to assess that damage, to prepare a legal file to be used further or later at a later stage before international institutions is something that the UAE may or may not pursue. My call is at this point of time, while the evidence are fresh, we need to collect evidence. We need to prepare a legal file that can be presented before international institutions.
Just finally, but just to interrupt there. So it doesn't matter that the United States and Israel started it. The compensation has to come from Iran, not from the United States and Israel.
The compensation has to come from the person who has caused directly the damage to the UAE. Now, if Iran believes that it has a case, it can prepare its own file and present it similarly at the like that UAE is doing. For us, we have not been bombarded by US, we have been bombarded by Iran. So naturally, if we are going to sue anyone, it's going to be Iran.
Dr. Habib Al-Mullah, great to have the legal perspective from the UAE. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. Our thoughts are with all those affected by the war in West Asia. Our war coverage will continue on Monday with someone Tucker Carlson recently called one of the most informed people in the United States who can speak freely about what is happening. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.